Hi, welcome to the Honeycomb Podcast, the podcast all about New Zealand food and drink and the people that make it happen. I'm Asher Boot, your host and owner of The Ramen Shop, Hillside Kitchen and Cellar, and Tinakori Bistro. Taking care of all the technical stuff is producer Steve Cochran of Rockpool Productions. On this episode, we're speaking to Matt Dagger of Kibosh Food Rescue. All right, Matt, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to get into Kibosh later. I want to talk a bit about you first. You grew up in New Zealand.
I did, yep.
Do you have any particular sort of food memories growing up here?
My family were orchardists, so I grew up on a very large apple orchard, and we had apples and peaches and kiwi fruit and all sorts of different fruit. So this was up on the Bombay Hills, at the base of the Bombay Hills and sort of south of Auckland. My family were producers. My father ran the orchard, and my mother spent our childhood furiously bottling fruit, and we had a farm gate where we would sell a lot of the fruit from, and we also picked and packed a lot of it for overseas markets. So, and yeah. That was, my childhood was spent around fruit.
It's fascinating, and I didn't know that you came from that background, but almost everyone we speak to who is involved in food has a real connection to food in their childhood.
Yeah, I spent probably most of my teenage years and early 20s swearing I'd never do anything with food, but you somehow get sucked back in, you know?
Just completely off topic here, we're kind of on topics, but how do you feel about fertile land? There's a lot of discussion around fertile land becoming housing developments and things like that coming from the Bombay.
It's very topical. I think, there's these two really big issues. We've got to feed people, but we also people need places to live, and I think that obviously been doing a bit of work up in Kapiti recently in the same issue, the loss of fertile land to urban sprawl, and it's becoming more and more of an issue. Personally, I think that there is wisdom in putting covenants and restraints on the expansion, because if you don't have the land to grow the food to feed the people, then you're obviously in a real dire situation.
Absolutely.
But it is a real tricky one.
And what about just the exposure to food and how food's grown or produced and brought about? Do you consider that? I mean, again, coming from, I grew up on a farm, so, I always knew where food was from.
I think there's always been a lot of value on food, in my family. And so part of my worldview is, food's really valued. And and I think that's working for Kibosh and being in a position where I have seen, and previous, before I worked for Kibosh, I worked for the City Mission, and having seen the struggles and the difficulty and the hardship that a lot of people face in actually just acquiring the basic acquisition of food, obviously that's influenced me massively.
Yeah.
Then at the other stage, you have and we'll talk about this further, I'm sure, but the issue of food waste, and you see how much food is just needlessly wasted. That as well has massively, massively influenced the way that I live and the way that, even in the time that I've been with Kibosh, I know that our own behavior and even the value we put on food and how we look after it and how we, just in our own lives, we ensure that we, trying to walk the talk, in our own personal lives. But our behavior, our shopping behavior, our cooking behavior, the value that we put on food at home has definitely changed as a result of the influence of working for Kibosh. But when you have that around you all day, that's inevitable.
Yeah. So. No, that's great. Hey, let's explain what Kibosh is.
Yeah, sure.
Let's go into that for our listeners that don't know. Can you give us a rundown?
Yeah, sure. So Kibosh is a food rescue organisation, and essentially it's a logistics organisation that straddles both the environmental sector and the social justice sectors of community work. And what we do is we link up the food industry with community groups that support people in need. So we take food from businesses, be they supermarkets, factories, logistics companies, some restaurants, small cafes, and we, through a process with a number of steps, we make sure that the food reaches people in need who don't have enough food, facing food insecurity. We don't deliver the food directly to those people. We do this in partnership with other organisations. So Kibosh really links up the food industry with all community groups, ensuring that quality surplus food reaches those who need it.
Yeah.
So the process it goes through, it's picked up in our trucks, it's delivered back to one of two bases where there's quite a vigorous quality control. Every item is checked for best before dates, used by dates. We make sure that there's no bad fruit, bad vegetables, nothing rotten. We make sure that no seals are broken, packets are still safe and secure, and then all of that gets allocated to charities as per their specific needs, and then they come and pick it up from Kibosh, deliver it on to their clients. And I guess the food really is just one small part of the entire process of at the charity's end. One of the things, if you're a community group that's taking food from Kibosh, you have to be delivering some service in conjunction with the delivery of food. And that's one of the requirements of the charities that we work with.
Have you got an example of that?
So, for example, the City Mission will take food from Kibosh. They'll make emergency parcels or food parcels for families. And if you have more than three food parcels, you are required to enroll upon one of the City Mission's courses. It might be a social worker, it might be a budget advice, it might be a cooking course. And it's those courses, that extra sort of education that really moves people towards independence themselves rather than just being a handout. It's actually, a conduit to bring people into the other services that do make that long-term difference. Saying that, at Kibosh, we'll supply food banks that in turn will make referrals to WINS or to different budget advice services. We work with a lot of groups that work with youth. So we provide food to homework clubs, after-school sports groups, weekend holiday programs. Once again, all of the groups that take food from Kibosh, so that in addition to having to provide some other kind of a service, they have to be looking after people who are in need or vulnerable or at risk. And generally that need that underlies that food insecurity is poverty. That's a real commonality that you see amongst all these groups.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of Kibosh until, 5-6 years ago. And when I heard of it, I thought, wow, that's awesome. That's something I've got to be involved with somehow. But hearing, those extra steps as well, that's great.
So to be a recipient organisation, there's sort of four main things that we require from you. You have to be a bona fide community group. You can't, Ash's Happy Food Bank. It has to be, you've got to be properly set up. You have to be able to look after the food. So quality and food safety and making sure the whole chain's really, the food's really carefully looked after and chilled appropriately and distributed appropriately. That's a really important thing for us. You have to serve those people that I was talking to you about, people who are facing food insecurity for reasons of poverty or hardship or whatever it is. And then the fourth thing is that you have to be delivering other services in conjunction with the distribution of food. So, and we think those are just pretty common sense criteria for we can't do everything. We can't support every group in the world and we can't feed every person that doesn't have enough food. But so we've chose those criteria and that's what we're sort of mandated to deliver food to.
Is that important for a charity to be focused?
Oh, I think it's really important. I think it's very, very important. So as a small charity, we work under a vision statement and a mission and a set of values. And for us, our vision is zero food poverty, zero food waste. So it's very aspirational. The fact is we're never going to be able to eliminate all food insecurity. We're never going to be able to stop all food waste. But I think, having that aspiration of zero food poverty, zero food waste, it means you do as much as you can to work towards it. Our mission statement is to be the link between the food industry and charities that support people in need. And it's very easy to be pulled away from your mission and diverted onto other things. So we're really clear that's what we do and we're not going to be pulled into other directions. So we're often people talking to us, where's your secondary waste restaurant, the cafe that you're using this food to? Where's the chutneys and jams that you could be producing? Where's all these, the cooking school that you could be running? And those are all great ideas and they've probably got a real place. But for us and under what we do and within the capacity that we've got, we just stick to that core mission and try and sort of evade mission creep. The fact is, though, that things do come up and people get pulled to different things and pulled aside, but we really try and focus just on that core business.
And surely those sort of things could become the subsidiaries or the where you're feeding food into if they were doing it in the right sort of way.
Yeah, and that is, the kind of, I think in the both the business sector and in community groups, there's this real thing that's popped up over the last few years of social enterprises, businesses and enterprises that are designed to both turn a profit but also have a community good. Yeah. And I definitely think there's a place for them. We haven't found that happy place for Kibosh where we can both operate as a bona fide charity doing that, delivering that community good, as well as having a commercial enterprise alongside it that complements what we do. And there is a grey area, and there's moving into that brings in a lot of challenges.
Within food, especially.
And even like the laws that apply to businesses are very different than the laws that apply to the community groups. Yeah. As soon as you start introducing exchange of money and commercial interests, you have a whole different set of laws and requirements and things you have to do.
So how much food is passing through Kibosh?
At the moment, we would be on a monthly basis, around 30,000 kilos a month come through.
Yeah.
So it's about 30 tons a month coming through the two sites. And then on top of that, there's probably about another 3 or 4 tons of food that go into our waste streams. Yeah. So it's a, we process about, yeah, about 35,000 kilos, and about 5,000 of that goes into they're not good enough for people.
Yeah.
Food dignity is really important to us. So if we're providing food to an organization that's supporting people in need, we're pretty sure that the people that are getting that food are going to be having a pretty rough time in lots of other aspects of their lives. So we want to make sure that the food they get is the best quality possible.
Yeah.
So the way that the food grading process works at Kibosh, it's all done by volunteers, and we train them up, and we basically train them, if you're distributing food to people, we want this to be the quality that you would pick off the shelves at the supermarket.
Absolutely.
So that's really important to us. And that means, between 10 and 15% of the food that comes in goes into waste streams because it's not good enough for people.
Yeah.
Most of that goes to an animal sanctuary up in Ōtaki that saves and houses animals, but a large portion of it also goes into a composting scheme, Kaira Compost. So none of it's going back into landfill. It's all actually finding a secondary or a tertiary use.
No, that's
great. But obviously
great.
The majority is going to people.
Yeah, that pride factor is something that's really fascinating, and I think that's great. But yeah, being not only having sustenance, but being able to be proud of that food that you have, and the normalization of that food, and helping uplift people in
absolutely.
That way
is
fantastic. Because I guess there is almost a common perception that, well, you can make do, you can just get by, you shouldn't be asking for the.
And I think that, you know, food rescue or food redistribution, it exists in different forms around the world, and even within New Zealand. And one of the criticisms that it always faces is why should people, because of their socioeconomic position, be receiving other people's cast-offs or things that are past used by date or sub-quality? And I totally agree with that. But I think the way that we've put this process in of grading and quality control and really sorting through this food, it does ensure that there's that quality and that dignity that travels with the food. Nobody should be getting, you know, other people's leftovers just because of, as I say, because of their socioeconomic position. But the fact is that food insecurity is a massive issue, and we've found a way to redirect this quality surplus food, giving it that extra lift of quality and dignity to get it to people.
That's great. Hey, you came in very excited today. Kibosh Kapiti?
Kibosh Kapiti, yeah. So Kibosh started in 2008, and for the first 6 or 7 years, it was just working in Wellington. And then 4 years ago, we opened a branch in the Hutt to look after all the community groups up in the Hutt. And we've just received funding and can confirm we'll be setting up a third branch up in Kapiti, based in Paraparaumu, and we'll be servicing the Kapiti coast right up to Levin, working with food donors and community groups right through the Kapiti and Horowhenua regions.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
So volunteers, you mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
How many volunteers does it take to process 30,000 kilo of food a month?
There are lots of hands, and lots of people do different things along the chain. So there'll be people who will volunteer, will go out with the drivers, picking the food up from the food donors. There will be teams of people who go to the markets in the weekend, taking the food from the markets. I guess the biggest job of the volunteers, though, is the food sorting and the quality control and the allocations and making sure that it reaches the charities. So across both the sites, the entire volunteer program at the moment is about 230 people on the fortnightly roster. So there's a lot of hands involved and a lot of people doing different things, but it seems to all run, you know, relatively smoothly and keeps ticking over. But I mean, it really is a example of what you can do if you've got lots of assistance and lots of people are enthused about your idea, and, you know, really they've got that community backing, which we're fortunate to have.
Yeah. No, that's great. Hey, we did mention earlier before we started recording about the Food Act 2014 and how that made it a lot of the food more accessible sort of to you. It sounded like you might have been involved in some of the legislative process there as well.
So I joined Kibosh in 2012, and we really saw the opportunity of, I'd been involved with Kibosh previously when I was working at City Mission, taking food and moved across to work for Kibosh. And one of the things that we were really aware was that to make this work, we had to really scale it up. And key to it was engaging supermarkets and getting the supermarkets on board. I think everyone knows about dumpsters and dumpster divers and sneaking around at night taking food out of dumpsters. And we really wanted to steer away from that and make sure everything was above board. The supermarkets were really supportive of what we were doing and that it was all really clear and working well. We were hitting a brick wall, though, and this was an issue of potential liability. What will happen if somebody gets sick of the food that the supermarket's given to us? Is the supermarket liable? Are we liable? Is the community group who's given it to the end client liable? Yes. And nobody could give us a clear answer. So we contacted the food safety minister at the time, which was Nikki Kay, and she was fantastic, incredibly helpful, and her team came and talked to us and really talked us through the process that you go about getting legislation changed. And it was quite, the timing was very fortuitous. The food bill, which became the Food Act, was just going through select committee process. So, and we looked at what had happened overseas and how food rescue organisations in foreign jurisdictions had pulled this off. And it was what's called a Good Samaritan clause is put into the legislation. So they basically, it says that food which is donated to a charity in good faith is exempt from any potential legal liability. So it means if something does go wrong down the chain, someone does become unwell, there's no legal liability. It's moved as it moves down the line. Of course, there's, you know, reputational liability. If something was to go wrong because of the food that we distributed, it would be a disaster. But legally, we're safe. Yeah. So we worked with the Nikki Kay, the minister at the time, and we filled out the submission, and we went to Parliament and went and sat before select committee, and there was, I mean, it was a no-brainer, you know. So there was, everybody supported it. I think it was more just for our own interest to go through the process and to make the submission, and yeah, it was included in the Food Act. So there's clause 323.2 is the Good Samaritan clause, and that was a game changer for us. We once that legislation cleared and supermarkets really had that confidence, they came on board en masse. So New Zealand obviously has the duopoly between the Foodstuffs and Progressive. That's the Pack and Save and New World on one, and then Countdown on the other. And you know, credit where credit's due, it was the Countdown. Yeah. Some people in the head office of Countdown really came on board and said, we'll really get behind this, not just in Wellington, right across the country. And so there's, at the moment, I believe there's 17 or 18 different food rescue organisations around the country. And Countdown really, really pushed to make it all start happening, get it smoothly. So they'll still be the biggest supporter of Kibosh easily. And then because of the business model as well, they're a big corporate, so sort of they're all told what to do at a store level from the central hub. Whereas the Foodstuffs, the New Worlds and the Pack and Saves are all owner operators, so quite a different operating model. Yeah. So getting them on board was it took a bit longer because it was a conversation with each of the store owners, but generally they've been really supportive. What we've found is that most of the stores already had a relationship with their local charity, and it could have just been any charity that was very close to the heart of the store owner.
Yeah.
We worked out pretty early on that if we started to push our way in on places and start taking food, the charity who was previously recipients of that would get pretty upset. They relied on that food. That was part of the service that they delivered, and you know, it's rightfully so. They, you know, these guys coming in and taking the food that they had been taking for decades. So we've backed right away if there's ever any kind of conflict there. But I think that what's happened over time is a lot of these small charities have seen Kibosh as a group and Kibosh being able to support them, and they've realised, oh, this organisation can take all the work away, can take all the logistics away, can take all the food sort of, and they get a much wider array of different food types that come with it. So, and they're generally really supportive. I mean, you know, it's a no-brainer. It takes all that work off them.
That's great. Do the different food rescue organisations around the country work together? Do you guys talk to each other?
Informally, informally. I mean, we all meet up once a year at a big summit that's coordinated by Countdown, and we have a lot of sharing of information and resource, and also even sharing of food. You know, there's a food rescue organisation might receive a whole lot of food, and I know that base up on Hopper Street at the moment, we've got pallets and pallets of beetroot that were sent to us, and that all came from another food rescue organisation in another city. And so there's a, I mean, I think because it's, you know, values driven, so no one's really out to compete with each other. So there's a lot of working together, but there's no centralised formal cohesion. Yeah. I think everyone sort of works in their own way in their own areas, and they're quite, you know, particular to their own methods and models.
Oh, cool. Hey. Again, I said this to you earlier, but I think it's really interesting. I really see Kibosh as a really positive charity, and the way that you were, I mean, you embody it personally, but the way everyone who's involved in Kibosh really just, you know, pushes out a positive energy, for lack of another way of putting it, but also the way you get involved in different events and do different things, I really appreciate. But also, can you tell me more about the reasoning behind that, and is it intentional?
Yep, it's very intentional. I think there's so many people having a tough time at the moment, and there really are, and there's so many stories of despair and woe and you know, things not working out. But the fact is there's amazing things going on there. There's lots of groups out there doing amazing things. There's lots of really positive, proactive initiatives going on that, you know, lives are really being changed and people sort of moving forward and looking up. And we've always thought, hey, look, we can go out and sell the sob story and try and get people to support us for all of the, you know, woes and the things that are going bad. Or we can say, listen, we've got a really positive solution to these two issues of food waste and food insecurity. And we're a really positive solution. So get behind this and help us for really positive outcomes. And so we've tried to reflect that, for example. So we're not funded by central government. All the funding, we have a whole lot of different funding streams. But obviously one of the big things that we do is fundraising and fundraising events.
Yeah.
So we've always tried to associate those with around food or around healthy living, but to take quite a positive, you know, slant on them. You know, make a meal in May is our biggest fundraiser. Have a big meal, share it with your friends, get behind it, eat, you know, enjoy life, enjoy the camaraderie, and then make a donation to support a little organisation that can help other people through it.
Yeah.
You know, Wellington on a Plate, which you were involved in, obviously, Asha. People are eating and drinking, but you're also learning about food, making a donation and helping an organisation. We really want to take that positive approach to fundraising and to, I guess, strength-based solutions to, you know, people's hardship. Once again, we don't have all those other solutions. We're not budget advisors and we're not social workers and we can't change the things that are causing those difficulties in people's lives, but we can positively help others that can do that. Yeah. So, yeah.
Do you think those events and, you know, Make a Meal in May and the All Taste No Waste event that you do for Wellington on a Plate, like, causes a sense of empathy for people as well within that? Like, is there, you know, I'm enjoying a lovely meal right now. You know, should I be supporting other people to be able to have a lovely meal that are less in a position to?
I don't know if they do assist with empathy.
Mm.
I think that
context is probably, it's a hard one to get across.
Yeah, I think they definitely do get people thinking. People, in my experience, so especially with Kibosh, people that are having a good time and supporting us, they tend to be very happy to give when, and we're talking money here, financially happy to contribute in the knowledge that they're having a good time as well.
Yep.
So Make a Meal in May is a really interesting scenario. When we first started, it was called Miss a Meal in May.
Okay.
And the concept was the opposite. Was don't have a meal, don't celebrate, don't spend time with your friends, have a marmite on toast instead of going out and give the difference of money to Kibosh. And it was such a hard sell. People just weren't into it, didn't want to do it.
No.
And then after a couple of years, we were like, well, this is just, we're not pulling this off. Let's flip it on its head and call it Make a Meal and Mate. People loved it, you know? So you can just sort of see. And I don't think it changed the level of support that people had for what we do or the empathy for the end users or people facing food insecurity. But people just don't want to face that hardship themselves when they're supporting other people that are facing hardship. And, you know, that's fine. So that's has been what we've tended to focus on, and not just even in the way that we communicate. It's always quite difficult to talk about the end users and the hardship that these people face whilst maintaining their privacy and their dignity, for example. So it's quite a hard thing to play on that emotional heartstrings with people with food insecurity, so whilst maintaining their dignity. So we've always really taken a real positive approach. Mm. Hey, we've got a good solution. There's these problems which are, you know, out of control, but we've got a solution that can make a change on a small, you know, local scale. But let's make sure everyone has a really enjoyable time while we do it. And I think this is something you see in our volunteer community too. We really try and make that fun for people, make sure that people, you know, they turn up and they get ready to do the food sort. And we want them to enjoy what they're doing and not feel like they're being overworked. And so, you know, we're quite careful. 2 hours a fortnight, that's all we ask people. We like to go in there and the music's playing and, you know, sometimes you see a sneaky beer's been smuggled in and that's all okay, you know. So it's, as long as they're having a good time, we don't want anyone to be involved with it and it's a drag for them,
And that definitely shows, though, like, you know, when you meet and talk to people that are involved with Kibosh, it's always a positive experience for those people.
Well, that's good to hear, so thank you. I think we try and take a positive approach to it. You know, environmentally, it's massive. You know, this is 35 tons of food that's not going as a landfill each month. But I think socially, this is people are eating good food. I mean, this is the other thing about the food. There's a real focus on fresh produce, dairy, meat. So it's, you know, quality, healthy, nutritious. He's trying to steer away as much as possible from things that, you know, perceived to be unhealthy.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, this is going to people who otherwise wouldn't have any food. So, yeah. It's, I mean, it's just a no-brainer, win-win for all.
Oh, it is. Mm. Yeah, it's great. Hey, what drew you to working in charities? Like you said, City Mission onto Kibosh. Is there more before that, or what's the story?
As many young Kiwis do, I went overseas after university and travelled and did all sorts of different jobs that you could do as you go along, and dug holes and carried bricks and worked in a lot of kitchens and worked in a lot of bars. And I ended up in hotel management, so travelled around working in hotels and little restaurants. And then my partner and I ended up, we had been over in France, we were living in Paris, and we had an opportunity to move back to New Zealand and to run a lodge down in the South Island in Te Anau. So we went down there, did that for 3 years, running a sort of a boutique lodge in Te Anau, and, you know, hospo and cooking, and I got really burnt out and became really, what would you say, just lost the love for it and had a few bad experiences with unappreciative punters and thought I've had enough of this. And yeah. I really threw my toys a little bit and said, I'm not going to work with the, you know, overprivileged and underappreciative anymore. I'm going to go and flip it on its head. So I came up and just a total change, went to work, do a little bit of work with City Mission, and one thing led to another, and was there for a few years, and then got involved with Kibosh and really found my place. I think I was never very successful in business, didn't have a natural acumen for making money. It was just not my sort of thing. It was never financially driven. It was sort of, whereas the, you know, the community sector is very values driven, and it's and just really appealed to me. And I think I'm not competitive by nature, so we don't have that in our sector. I mean, there's a little bit of every now and then, but it's pretty gentle. And I just, for someone that just never been really driven by making huge pots of money or anything like that, so it's And as such was pretty poor in the commercial sector. But whereas this is, it's great. I love it. And you know, it got all sorts of people, and it's a real vast and different array of types of folk that we come across, and from all sorts of walks of life, you know, both the clients of the charities we work with and the charities themselves, and then you know, the different supporters and funders, and you know, we're very, very fortunate, very privileged. We get to move in lots of different circles because there's so many people that are involved in this initiative. So I consider myself incredibly lucky, and I don't have to put up with unappreciative customers, you know, which some people are great with, but I just got burnt out, actually.
It's fascinating that you say that. I didn't actually know about that that background. So many people in hospo, and this is a big discussion that I think is going on and going on more and more. People in hospo want to give. They want to look after. Mm. You know, they really want to keep doing that. David Chang speaks about this much better than me, so go listen to him in terms of talking about, you know, hospo as a career is great, but there's so many more sectors where you can have that outlet. That are probably better for you, for so many people that are in the hospitality sector, because you do get so many hospitality workers get burnt out and get really affected. Yep. For me, a few years ago, it was really important that my focus changed from a very competitive driven sort of person, and I'm still very driven, but my drive is a lot different to what it was at that point. And I am happier, and I feel like I can achieve much more in terms of enabling other people to be successful.
Sure.
And ironically for me, that was opening more venues or doing more things, because then you can spread your knowledge across many more people and affect many more customers and I get to do things like this you know, so much more. But the charity side of things is obviously a great way to head in that.
So I've been working in, you know, the not-for-profit sector for 11, 12 years now, and I couldn't imagine going back to the cutthroat world of commerce. Is just, I mean, it's you know, and different. I meet people that in the not-for-profit sector, and you just think, oh, you don't belong here. You should be out there, you know, hustling and making deals, and because that's your world. Or likewise, people who work in government, you know, there's a different sector again. So, but for me, this definitely found my place here. And I mean, I think, you know, I'm obviously a people person too. So working in an organization which has a lot of volunteers, and there's a lot of energy and you know, a lot of strong support. It's been really positive for me.
Mm. That's great. Hey, Kibosh, any big things coming up, any events or?
So we've just done Wellington on a Plate. We tend to go a little bit quieter this time of year. We'll have the Christmas quiz will be coming up, and we've got Christmas is really the next bunch of things, but obviously the work towards Kapiti is our big focus over the next few months. So I think we're going to be head down, tail up doing that. But keep an eye on this, sign up to Kaibosh's newsletter, and we'll make sure we tell you when the Christmas quiz for cheats, which is a wonderful thing when that comes on. Garage Project's 12 kegs of Christmas, that's a big deal in the lead up to Christmas. And then obviously next year we'll have Make a Meal in May. So the calendar of different events tends to roll around pretty quickly. But I think the big thing for us is really the work up in Kapiti and getting that up and running. That's going to be our big focus over the next few months.
Very exciting times. If people want to volunteer, donate, support,
Everything's online, www.kaibosh.org.nz, and that's where you can find out what we're doing, find out who we're supporting, find out who's supporting us, make a donation, volunteer your time to join up and help out with the food sorts. Everything's on there.
Yeah, cool.
Lots more information about us and what we do and things that have gone on over the years. So.
All right, mate. Hey, thanks so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's been a real pleasure to come and talk about our work and what we do at Kaibosh, and thanks for helping us spread the word, and thanks for everything else you do for us, Asher. Hugely appreciated.
Very exciting. And yeah, we'll make sure the information is available for anyone that wants to contact Kaibosh, whether you want to volunteer, donate, or anything else you can do to help, I'm sure will be appreciated. Thanks for taking the time to listen to us today. Check out honeycomb.co.nz for information and links relating to this episode. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so you'll never miss an episode.